There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to the Pre-Med Podcast. Thanks for joining me for part two of my conversation with Tom Borum, NQP and Medical Support Officer. In the second part of this episode, we discussed the NHS strike action plan for tomorrow, as well as some of Tom's experiences as a paramedic, experiences with stress, mental ill health in the ambulance service, and coping strategies for that. You'll be thrilled to know that I don't really have any more pre-med advertising to do since I did it all in the last episode a couple of days ago. But if you're interested in more educational content, please do check out our website, www.prem-ed.com. And of course, we've got quite a back catalogue of episodes. So if you're listening, if you're a new listener to the podcast and you enjoy this episode, please do check out some of our older episodes. And thanks for joining us. Right, without further ado, let's continue my chat with Tom.
So, strike action.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Yeah, I voted to strike, yeah.
Yeah, are you gonna? Are you supposed to be working on the, when is it? The 21st?
21st. Well, my union didn't get enough.
How is it?
So they're rebalancing.
Oh, interesting.
But it wasn't an easy decision.
No?
Like, I think a lot of people are saying it was really easy. But for me, it wasn't an easy decision.
Why not?
I mean, there is a moral component to it, isn't there? Because you think, that could be the day my dad's sick.
Or yeah.
Something like that.
What is that? Because they're, I mean, I agree, but what is it about? Because the proposal is that they'll, we'll still, as a service, we'll still be responding to high, like we'll still try and reach patients we need to reach, basically.
Yeah.
So what is it about that's morally difficult?
Well, it's still leaving people who, some of the calls that we get, people do actually genuinely need help sometimes.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, for me, I think the triage system is awful.
Yeah, I mean, just I am campaigning a bit for the pay, but I just want to need to review the system.
Yeah.
Like, I was called a couple of days ago, went to a nursing home, called by a nurse because someone's peg machine had broken. The patient was fine.
Yeah.
But the actual machine that she was peg fed with, they lost the parts. So she called an ambulance on an 18-minute response.
Yeah.
And when we've worked out the patient was fine, you know, just... call from a nurse.
Yeah, in a nursing home.
What are we doing there?
Yeah. And I think that, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because that, like, that can get a high-ish priority response. And you know, so C1 calls, a lot of the, because it's unconscious noisy breathing as a pathway, we see loads of patients with, who are like intoxicated, but otherwise all right, or they've had a seizure, and they're now awake and talking. And because of the way the system works, you know, if they're post-ictal when the call starts and they go C1, then they've got to ask all these questions to get them out of the C1 thing. So by the time you get there, you're basically responding to someone that's conscious and talking. Meanwhile, like you say, there's a lot of the lower category C3, C4 calls are patients, often elderly, cold, lying on the floor for long periods of time, like muscle damage and all that kind of stuff. And it's, I agree. I think it's an ethically complex one because, I mean, ultimately that's part of the reason that people strike, isn't it, to address that?
Yeah, I think.
And I guess one day of, because I think the issue is that, I mean, I don't know the plans, but most ambulance services probably say we'll still go to C1s and 2s.
Yeah.
And the C3s and 4s will be longer delayed. And then ultimately you're delaying those jobs even more.
Yeah.
But I guess it's one day to try and save it happening continuously.
Yeah, I think if you ask a lot of the guys, I think it's not, no one would ever say it's just about the money.
No.
That's right. They do need to rethink the whole process. And yeah, and I think you just need to highlight to the people sometimes that they might not need an ambulance.
Yeah.
On a strike day when we're not at work, maybe they'll put themselves in a taxi and get to the hospital.
Yeah. And I think there is a big bit about the money.
Yeah.
Because people don't like to say that, but ultimately, like, what we are doing is a job. And like, bills are going up constantly, isn't it? I mean, obviously, no, we're in a cost of living crisis. And but I just find, like, recently, everyone's put their prices up.
Yeah.
So, like, College of Paramedics have increased their prices. Like, most of my energy suppliers have increased their prices. Like, everyone's increased their costs by about 10%.
Yeah.
And then that's, like, real-time inflation.
Yeah.
It's happened really quickly after COVID, and there's no reflection of that in pay.
No. And
I think, like, I don't know, like, a band 5 paramedic, or band five anyone, actually, is not particularly good pay compared to other, you know, like, you've got a degree.
Yeah.
Compared to other jobs that you could be doing.
And there is this, like, view that, oh, God, the paramedics, aren't they so lovely and selfless? And NHS heroes with the rainbow banners and thank you, NHS, saved our bacon during COVID.
Yeah, that didn't last that long, though.
No, but then
there's a few months of clapping.
Yeah, and then, but what people need to remember is that we are trained professionals, and we are trained to provide care, and we are just genuinely nice people, but at the end of the day, we're still professionals.
Yeah.
And we're here to do a job, and we're here to be professional. We're here to
do,
and I do my job well because I want to be paid. And
yeah,
I am a nice bloke, but I'm not doing it because I'm selfless.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't paid.
No, exactly. And even if you wanted to,
you
can't do that because everyone needs a job.
Like, appreciate that, the NHS hero stuff, but at the end of the day, we're NHS professional heroes, aren't we?
I think that's a problem. It's a big thing with like medicine, like, you know, the doctors are voting to strike and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Because junior doctor, in fact, the consultant stuff is bad as well, as far as I understand, but the junior doctor stuff is bad, isn't it? And a lot of the stuff with junior doctors is because there's so much emphasis on expecting people to go above and beyond because you're a doctor and you're saving lives. You're like, you know, you shouldn't have to go above and beyond, because a lot of people, some people, you know, some people are really passionate and that's their life's calling, which is fine. But I think the majority of the healthcare workforce, rightfully so, it's like a job that they enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And like you say, you're motivated and passionate to do it. But like, I've got a family and a house and I want to go to work, do my job well, and then at the end of the shift, go home and not talk to anyone about work or do any work stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's the issue with medicine. Or look, what's happening with junior doctors, they can't, you know, end of the shift, they're like, oh yeah, but you're still looking after a patient, or the night cover's not come in, so we're going to need you to kind of hang on and stuff. You know, that is completely inappropriate way.
And that's not professional.
No, exactly.
And that's not safe.
But that's ultimately what our healthcare system relies on. I think, you know, compared to that, we're quite lucky that generally in ambulance services, you get paid for being laid off and like enforced overtime for an overrun, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, if you book annual leave, it's booked.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in some parts of the NHS, you're like, you have your leave cancelled if the cover's poor and stuff. Yeah. And it's just, I think, I mean, I'm not in a union, but I am pro-striking.
Yeah. So you haven't voted then?
No.
No. Yeah.
I was in a union, but I am pro-striking and anti-union. I'm not.
I mean, some of the unions seem pretty militant, don't they? Really,
well, I just think, like, they, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've had a mixed bag of experience with unions, and like, you know, you need to be in a union for this kind of strike action, but it doesn't come around very often. And I find on balance, like, when I've had like personal issues with the ambulance service, they've been completely useless, and I've had colleagues with the same stories. And in fact, I found when a union person turns up and doesn't really know your case or how to support you, My reflection has been I should have just read the policy myself. And done it yourself, yeah. Which is pretty much what I do now. So it may or may not be right. But then I was looking at the guidelines on stroking. You can, so I've got more of a right to strike than you have now. Mm. Because if you're in a union that hasn't met the threshold for striking, you can't. Is that the case?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're independent, not in a union, you want to strike, you can.
Yeah.
So
I think we frustratingly got 48%.
What's the cut of 50?
50, yeah. Something like that. It was something stupid and it's very frustrating. But
it's quite surprising actually as well.
Yeah.
Because I would, yeah. I mean, I've not spoken to many people about it, but I wouldn't expect many people to be against striking.
I think there was a poor turnout of voters. I think people just naturally assumed that we'd be doing it. But
yeah, I guess I'm part of that. I didn't vote. Did I vote? Do you have to be in a union to vote?
Yeah.
I didn't vote then.
That was through the post.
Oh, there you go. I was just any post I throw in the fire because it's 2022. Fucking hell, it's an email. Jesus. Fair enough, yeah. I mean, so you're supposed to be working for the strikes?
I think I'm actually on annual leave.
Interesting. Are you going to be picketing? Actually using your leave?
I might be, yeah. I always thought that hopefully the threat's enough.
Yeah.
Threat of a strike. I haven't really given them enough time to react, have we? But I think I always hope that the threat would be enough.
Yeah.
Not really up for this confrontation, but
yeah. I don't know, it's gonna come around.
You're
quick,
up for it.
I'm up for it. I'm on a training week, so I've got to cover the strikes. We're being redeployed to cover the strikes. Yeah.
There was a
so I'm expecting to go into work on a bus and have stuff thrown at me like Billy Elliot.
Feel bad for the A&E nurses. Obviously, we work quite closely with them, but they're not striking.
No, I think the RCN didn't reach. Was it A&E's RKN specifically? Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I was chatting to someone recently, and they said they haven't reached the threshold of striking. Although I think actually the RCN vote was like 94% or something.
Yeah,
don't quote me on that. So it must be like an RKN thing or something.
So what's staying open? It emergency and
I literally haven't got a clue.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably based on experience from last time round when I was just qualified, I might be a student. It's basically for us, we responded only to the high priority calls.
Yeah.
Which would now be C1, C2s. And I can't remember what emergency services did.
Yeah.
I mean, A&E will be open the whole time, won't it? But I don't know about other services. I mean, if other community services aren't open or are reduced hours or whatever, A&E is going to be fucked. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's nuts now.
Yeah. It's already, I mean, it's not even that cold yet. Well, pretty cold actually, but
yeah, but I mean, it's
winter's just started.
It's snowing
it?
Yesterday, wasn't it? And we're not even in, like you say, not even in January, February.
Winter pressures are real, aren't they? And
yeah.
Well, we must be on the like 12th wave of COVID at the moment.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm pretty sure. Do you reckon the lateral flow tests work anymore?
Don't know, I've not used one.
I've had so many people recently. Myself included. I went off sick recently because I felt rough with every possible symptom of COVID. And the lateral flow test weren't working. I was like, yeah. I must have it. And there's a few people with a similar thing. Side note. Yeah. And I mean, what I haven't asked you about is like working ops. Because I've done an overtime shift recently. And it's just like surreal. So I started doing this CCP job about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I like when I go back into overtime on the road, I don't do it that often, but it just seems like completely different to what it was when I left it.
Oh, in what way?
Just the nature of the work.
Yeah.
So I feel, and there's something about I think as a specialist and experienced paramedic, I'm more confident with discharging stuff.
Yeah.
It's probably an element of it. But like when I left operational work, I just felt like we were conveying abdo pains to hospital, like chest pains and stuff, and doing a bit of emergency work, and that's what I felt like paramedicing was.
Yeah.
The shift I did the other day, I went to one patient who had a seizure, didn't have her seizure meds, so I went to the pharmacist for her to try and find them, and then the next patient was like, she'd been having neurological symptoms for a year. And a community team had recommended she call an ambulance. for an emergency CT scan in case it was a acute neurological thing. And I was like, well, it's not, by definition, it's not acute. So then we like referred back to the GP and like community services. And it's just like, what I felt like was none of the work I did was remotely medical.
Mm.
It was all, like we were discussing before, it was all just like kind of complex social care and helping people navigate the complexity of like what service you call. But I didn't, like I didn't open a single bag or do anything. Like I didn't, I, you know, we did a blood pressure occasionally because you're supposed to.
Yeah.
But, you know, we didn't have to do any obs on anyone or didn't like, definitely didn't cannulate anyone, didn't get any drugs.
Yeah.
I think the most we did was recommend someone took their own paracetamol.
Yeah.
And like that's madly different to what how I left it.
Yeah, people
is that day to day?
Yeah, that is exactly how I find it on the road. people do not. It's. I don't. I think people can be cynical and say, "Oh, these patients just don't know what to do." But often they ring 111 with knowing not they have not called an ambulance.
Yeah,
they call 111 and then 111 triage just send an ambulance on a blue light run.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
I mean that's the thing about the patients I saw is like none of them are. Malicious,
no,
like trying to get to A&E.
No,
but you kind of so like the person I went to with the neurological symptoms, they've just been recommended to go to hospital. But she had like they're all psychosomatic. All her diagnoses were psychosomatic rather than physical problems. And she was like really frank about it. It's like she her symptoms were exacerbated by being stressed and like emotionally upset and stuff. And I was like. If you go to hospital and sit on a hard plastic chair and you're incontinent and can't feel your limbs and stuff, now that's not gonna be a stressless experience for you.
No.
And also, you probably won't get a scan.
No.
And so, and that you know that person was like, well, I don't want to do that, but they've just been told, oh, call an ambulance because you need to. And like you say, it's trying to navigate that systems.
Yeah, and I mean, we're the one service that can't really say no. Like,
yeah, can we not?
Well, we don't do it enough, do we?
I don't know.
It's
no, I mean, no, we don't.
And other services, when they feel like there's a bit of a risk, they'll just send the ambulance.
Yeah, yeah. And that is an issue in itself, isn't it? Because if you have like a GP, who, I mean, and again, not to try and be insulting to GPs or whatever, but. You know, if they're really busy and someone calls with chest pain, obviously you'd be like, just call an ambulance.
Yeah.
But it's difficult for us to go out and disagree with a GP's decision.
Yeah.
Like medico-legally, that puts you in a complex place.
Well, like, look at that nurse who ended up calling us for a broken peg machine.
Yeah.
Like, that is a social issue.
Yeah.
It's solved by ringing the company that makes the peg machine.
Yeah.
But. She's called an ambulance, and our control just don't have the time or the like.
The system isn't theirs, do
they? Yeah, it's just not. They can't just say no. We've got to turn up, avoiding the other lower grade calls to tell this nurse.
So what do you do about that? What did you do?
Well, I actually looked on Amazon Prime for a replacement part. I didn't have it, so I ended up calling the district nurses, who told the nurse. They were very disappointed in her and gave her a number for her to call.
Because I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think as well, a lot of ambulance people often like build a rod for own back.
Yeah.
And you can, like you say, people you want to help. So like some people go to that job and you know, sometimes you go to an older, lonely person, you make them a cup of tea and stuff, and all of that is completely appropriate.
Yeah.
You're like, if you get called out, if you get called out to that job, you mentioned like the peg thing, and then you solve that problem for them, like you're like positively reinforcing that behaviour.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have a responsibility to say that this is not appropriate, and like educate people.
Yeah.
Like this is not an appropriate ambulance thing. Like no. I shouldn't be turning up with a degree and blue lights to like Google something for you.
Yeah. How much equipment have we got in the back of the ambulance that I haven't touched in years?
Yeah.
Normally walking with an iPad and the obs kit.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I don't normally open. But, I mean, part of being an NQP is that you have to talk to someone. And so when you're put in those places where you know you don't need to be there.
Yeah.
You still need to talk to someone and justify it. And sometimes they'll hold you to account with a policy. And then, and then that way. But, it did not help that during that job the England-France match was on.
Oh, yeah.
In the patient's room.
Did we do well?
We
I did watch it, but
we did not. I remember I was on the phone to district nurses. Harry Kane scored the first penalty.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so
it's an emotional rollercoaster.
Yeah, it was really, really stressful couple of hours.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Yeah, fair. And so how, like, operationally, so how much of your work do you reckon is made up of those kind of social complex bit of medicine, but generally social jobs percentage?
Probably like 75.
Do you reckon?
75, yeah.
And how often do you deal with the kind of critical sick patients that you thought you'd deal with when you applied for the job?
5.
Yeah.
Maybe even less than that.
So 20% actual emergencies.
Yeah, actual.
And so how does it feel? Like when you go to work, I used to, when I was really new, I'd be nervous going to work because you never know if that job might turn up. And then I found after a while, you just think, oh, it won't turn up. And then when it does, you feel woefully unprepared. And now I kind of feel, like now that I know that I will generally go to those jobs, I actually feel a bit more comfortable about it. Because like, those jobs can be stressful, but I think it's like not knowing when you're going to go to them that's stressful. At least I know, like, if my radio goes off, it's probably going to be a cardiac arrest or something.
Yeah.
But so I'm constantly prepared for that. But how does it feel if you're like day in, day out dealing with these urgent emergency care kind of things?
Yeah.
How prepared do you feel when that cardiac arrest comes in?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because when you're an NQP, I think, I'm not ashamed to say that when I first qualified, I was terrified of my own shadow going down to the road.
I think that's probably a healthy way to be.
Yeah, it was. In every job, I was thinking, oh my God, I've got a headache. They must be having a subarach.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that. And you do kind of, you definitely do skill a lot. And then when you do get to these good jobs, I think these big jobs, you do get that adrenaline rush way more than if you were used to it, because I'll often take 3 or 4 minutes to settle into the job, a big job, then I'll probably be all right, but there is, you're not used to it and people think you are, but you're not. And like my big thing is I was terrified of obstetrics,
having babies. You and everyone else.
I don't know what it is about paramedics and obstetrics, but it's just terrifying. And every time, I've been probably sent to about 12 obstetric emergency jobs, and only 2 of them were actually the baby coming out. But you still, your hands are shaking on the wheel on the way. But when you get there, it's all right. So maybe now I've become a bit like cynical when they see one category one jobs come in. It's not really though, is it?
Which I think is common.
Yeah.
Most people like that.
Yeah.
And then, maybe. Has that ever caught you out?
Yeah, 100%. When I wasn't qualified, actually, I was a ECSW, but I was definitely a bit more cynical. I was going through one of my cynical phases, and we got sent to a cardiac arrest. The only note that came on the CAD was, "House has blown up."
Yeah,
I thought, no, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. Of course, it hasn't. Turned the corner, it was a house missing.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think it's happened to everyone.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I've gone into houses with just like the obs kit and then cardiac arrest, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I don't know, people, you can get a bollocking for it from management. But I think it's just like natural human behavior, isn't it? You're not going to lug a heavy bag into everything.
No.
And I also think what I find with my job now, I tend to find like the more experience I get, the more I just think about how I think more than what I actually do. But what I've reflected on recently is I am knackered if I go into work and don't do anything.
Yeah.
Whereas like if I go into work and I go to a few cardiac arrests or, you know, like some sick people and I had to do some thinking, then I tend to come home like quite refreshed and energetic.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that happens is like for me, I know there's a relatively high risk I go to some jobs like that. So you kind of, and even, you know, like I've got a bit of experience doing critical care now, but I still get like an adrenaline rush when I go to those jobs.
Yeah.
And I think the anticipation of it gives you a bit of a, like a base level of sympathetic drive.
Yeah.
So you're a little bit adrenalized for most of your shift. And then if you don't have some sort of exposure that allows you to put that adrenaline, like, you know, direct that adrenaline somewhere and do something with it, then that is exhausting. And then you've got to kind of switch off from being a little bit adrenalized all day.
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually do something, you you know, you can kind of direct that sympathetic drive to actually thinking and like doing some stuff, then you're like, the process has worked properly as your body expects, and I feel quite healthy as a result. And I think like that's how I feel now. And it's I think it's weird in operations, like I don't think you can maintain that. Like you can't consciously be like, I'm going to constantly be ready for a sick person if I know that statistically I'm not going to see one.
Yeah,
because I don't think it's healthy. Like you come back knackered all the time and depressed, and I don't think it's a healthy way to do it. So this process that people go through where they you kind of become a bit cynical, you're not prepared for jobs, it's like, I think that's like a self-preservation thing.
Yeah, and I think some people feel let down a lot of the time when they haven't done a critical care job, and I think that reflects on their on how they treat the lower acuity jobs.
Yeah, what do you think that is?
I think
why do you think people are waiting for those critical care jobs? Because I was one of those people, obviously, like, I went into that as a specialty, but
yeah, people want to be the trauma monkey, don't they? Get stuck in all the juicy jobs, and I think maybe sometimes you can get a bit frustrated on the road dealing with people that may not necessarily you feel need your help.
Yeah.
And then when you go to someone who actually requires your help, and it critical care and emergency care is interesting. It is.
Yeah.
Like it's what we signed up for, to help people in their worst moments. So you do want to go to that nasty traffic accident. You do want to go to that MI.
Yeah.
And you, because you can actually help someone. And the results can be more physical than when you're not dealing with someone like that.
Yeah, so I disagree with that, I think.
Yeah.
I think, I appreciate what you're saying, and if those jobs go well, then that is like a big buzz.
Yeah.
But you think, like, how many patients of the critically ill patients you've been to, how many of them have you really, like, how many times have you saved a life as a paramedic, do you reckon?
Couple of times.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same, because I kind of, we know like out of hospital cardiac arrest, the survival, chance of survival is like 10%.
Yeah.
So you apply that to, like, if you go to cardiac arrest all the time, then immediately, if you're working in a, like an average system, then you're going to be hitting like 1 out of 10 success stories. And I mean, that's, you know, the chance of you, of like an individual resuscitating someone to the point they walk out of hospital,
very low. Is
slim.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel, I think I've been through a bit of an emotional experience where I went into critical care with that exact thing. Like I was operational paramedic and I really wanted to be a critical care guy. And then I went into critical care, and then you kind of, like, I'll go into all these cardiac arrests and save loads of lives.
Yeah.
And then I had like a big dip of depression after about 6 months where I was like, actually, I'm going to loads of sick people. I'm just watching them die.
Yeah.
And that does not meet my, what I had in my head as like success, or my definition of success.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, and since, like, I've reflected on that, and then my definition of success personally has changed. So like survival is not necessarily the only thing that I think is successful, but also, you know, like closure for the family, or like a dignified death, or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I also find it quite interesting doing, you know, like if I do an overtime shift, I find that quite interesting, because if you can solve problems for people,
yeah,
I think it's not as palpable the impact that you have. But I think you can have a much more significant but you can have certainly a significant impact on people's lives. It's just like very different to critical care.
Yeah.
Which you must agree with if you don't want to be a critical care person, you want to go into primary care.
Well, any kind of impact is a good impact, isn't it? You could argue that. So,
well, I don't know.
Well, fixing...
What about being kicked in the face?
Well, that's for bad impact, isn't it? But fixing a peg machine for an old 90-year-old lady to stop her going to hospital.
Yeah.
Catching COVID and coming back and
infecting
the nursing home with COVID.
Yeah.
Like, you could argue that's quite a large impact.
Yeah.
But I'm hypothesising that impact. But
like, yeah. But I think that's the thing. And I think, you know, like you say, I think if people are new, then they... I personally think people like apportion, like probably inappropriately apportion a load of potential success to like critically ill patients.
Yeah.
When actually, I mean, the chances aren't very good, and the ones that do well, normally HEMS will come and take them, and then
they'll get their medals.
Thanks to HEMS and stuff, which is fine. HEMS are good. I love HEMS. but I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I kind of, I think maybe that's a problem that comes from education. I think a lot of the education is about how to do a recess and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you kind of end up attributing success to being good at resuscitation.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Whereas I kind of, yeah, I don't know. I find it a lot more satisfying now going to those kind of urgent and emergency type jobs. And, you know, maybe not fixing a peg machine. But if you go to someone with relatively complex medical needs, like that person I went to the other day with the neurological symptoms, it's like, it's quite enjoyable work because you have to like use your brain a bit and speak to some different professionals and like work out a pathway and make some risk benefit decisions. Yeah. And like ultimately, if you establish someone's expectations, what they want from you, which isn't necessarily always A&E, and then you can work out a way to fulfill those expectations.
Yeah.
Like you say, have a bit of an impact on someone's life. I think it's... there's definitely not to be said for that.
Yeah, and there are enjoyable outcomes to every job.
Every job?
Yeah, maybe leaving could be an enjoyable outcome to some jobs, but yeah, it can be a very rewarding job.
Yeah.
Not that we don't want to get paid more, but
if you're listening.
If you're listening out there.
Yeah.
But it can be a very rewarding job, and I think a lot of people... I don't know. A lot of people I've seen leave the trust have always come back. Some of them come
back. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, because
I think it's what you make of it as well. Yeah. Like there's always going to be that people on the station that are like negative about everything, and everything's a problem. And like there is, you know, there's good and bad with every job. But I think like the grass is always greener. And like you say, people leave, and then they're like, actually, without the freedom, you know, there's something to be said for driving around an ambulance and not having someone breathe down your neck all the time, and seeing. It's like amazingly, like the comparison of seeing one person at a time for as long as you want compared to, like we said, a nurse looking after 80 patients and trying to manage someone doing obs on 80 patients an hour or something. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? So definitely pros and cons. But I think it's what you make of it.
Yeah. It's definitely you need a good outlook to be.
Yeah.
To see what we do. And sometimes it is. Like last night I was shoveling the ambulance out of the road, out of the snow, and like you have to laugh about it or you cry maybe.
Yeah,
but sometimes maybe that's how we should approach going to these like not typical ambulance jobs.
Yeah, and I think so that's an interesting point actually to consider, is that how do you, I mean obviously you've got the army stuff and rugby or whatever you do in your spare time, but how do you balance that? Because I think like people that, and I was all in, well, like when I newly qualified, I was like ambulance geek. And I just think like now I'm not that person at all really. But I kind of think you had to balance that. I think if you get too invested in work, you know, like this strike thing, you know, I'm ethically for striking, but I also don't care enough to like spend, like prioritize that over spending time with my family, for instance. Like I'll go into work and do my job. And if, you know, I think, I mean, ultimately, like, I am a specialist paramedic, so I get paid a lot better than most of the ambulance service. So I think it's ethically appropriate for the majority of healthcare people, but I'm not striking because I think I should earn more necessarily. And I think there are some people that are so committed and passionate that it's, like, all-consuming. And I feel like that's not great for mental health. No, so yeah. how do you manage your mental health?
Yeah, well, it's burnout, isn't it? And
yeah, I mean,
you got to just recognise the symptoms of it in yourself. I've been there where I've been burnt out. I've been chucking myself doing loads of overtime.
Yeah.
Because it's working overtime with my mates. And then we all go to the pub after work and we all talk shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, actually you realise work chat can be quite boring when it's like...
Yeah. You realise that, don't you? When you go to... I always find like you go for a beer with like some mates from work and then you like bump into your mate or like your mate comes who you know outside of work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're just stood there in the corner like,
what are you on about?
Literally, like...
Yeah. So. No, I've learned to hate the phrase, I went to a job the other day and...
Mate.
And God, that is just... I don't want to know about it.
I hear that so often as well.
Yeah, I bet you get it a lot with...
You do.
Do people send you ECGs and you go, roll your eyes, mate? Just can't.
Well, do you know what? I quite like ECGs. But they do. And I kind of... The thing that... Yeah. I mean, I think over time I've become more interested in... like my own mentality and like the mentality of people working in emergency care and stuff and like the psychology of it.
Yeah.
To find it quite interesting. So I always like people want to talk to me about a job. I'm always open to discussing it.
Yeah.
If I'm at work generally. and this is the thing is that that's why I would never discourage people from talking about jobs. And
yeah.
You know, like people, you know, because of the nature of my job, like people in the crew room will say, oh, you know, I went to this kind of job and stuff. And you're like, most of the time, even if people aren't specifically saying why they're talking about it, like you can pick out a reason. And ultimately it's like, I wasn't confident in this decision or like this, the CCP said something which I disagreed with.
Yeah.
And you can kind of pick up on that.
Yeah.
And that's like an interesting thing to discuss.
Yeah.
Talking shop. Oh, I had an interesting question for you. Oh, yeah. So you said you've like recognised burnout in yourself.
Yeah.
Do you reckon it's always recognisable? Or like in your experience, have you... Because I've had it before and colleagues who have become burnt out and not recognised it themselves.
Yeah, I've seen it in colleagues before they have.
Yeah.
And I think my colleagues have seen it in me before I have.
What was that? How did that happen?
Well, it's just, I just remember being at a DOA.
Yeah.
And then just got myself in a right muddle with paperwork and getting the police on scene. And then I remember just walking out to the vehicle and then just having a cry. Next to quite a senior, he's a guy who's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was shot and he had this NQP in front of him crying after a DOA for what is going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't upset about like what I'd just seen. I was just upset because I caught myself in a right muddle in front of the patient and police.
Yeah.
I hadn't done anything like wrong other than got myself in a tears. And suddenly I'm in a vehicle with tears streaming down my face, unable to explain why I'm feeling this emotional.
Yeah.
To a guy who's... I was really embarrassed about having this emotional outburst. But I think he showed his experience in, like, he just saw it and he knew. We just started driving away and then got back to our base and I had to sit down with an OTL.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, you know, he gave me a bit of banter afterwards, but like in a friendly way that I knew that he was there for me and he probably recognised it. But I've seen it in colleagues as well. They turn up to work and we've left a patient at home or something, walked out, and they're suddenly, you know, they're kicking the back of the ambulance because they're so frustrated that we're dealing with problems that we shouldn't be dealing with. And you just need to say to them, you've been here too much. You need to take a step back.
And I think like that is like one of the big reflections for me. So you know, there's a lot of stress in the ambulance service, like generally speaking. And you know, there's all these statistics about like mental health problems being as high as they are in the military and increased like self-harm and suicide and all this like stuff around mental health in emergency services, which is for me and people often attribute that to, oh, you say some awful stuff, like you go to dead children, you should never see that, or like you see a lot of dead people and stuff. And like what you just said there is really reflective of what like I think about stuff, because you know, my job, I go to I think statistically we go to, I don't know, I think I worked out the other day, I've probably seen like over 200 dead people of like different ages and stuff, and that actually doesn't really bother me at all.
Yeah,
because what is important for me, I think, is that, like we spoke about before, like that if you can facilitate a dignified death and like make the family comfortable and stuff, and it, like seeing dead bodies for me isn't like that stressful thing.
No,
but what I do find, and so I find in my job where I see a lot of that stuff, I'm not proportionately more, I don't have proportionate more mental health. Like, I don't have any mental ill health that I'm aware of, and certainly nothing significant.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel particularly stressed or depressed or anxious or anything like that. But then you, like a lot of colleagues in operations do, and they don't see as much, or as many dead bodies, for example. But what you do find is like the general grind of, like we're talking about, anticipating jobs that don't happen, or dealing with something you don't feel like you should be dealing with.
Yeah.
Or queuing in A&E for 12 hours with someone that could be your grandma, watching them, like, their muscles waste away and stuff. On top of, like, the pressure of, like, you constantly got to get that job, but you're going to be late off because you're in somewhere, like, 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Like, I personally think, like, all of that stuff is what builds up.
Yeah.
And because people don't think that is what should attribute, or, like, contribute to mental ill health.
Yeah.
It generally gets ignored. Yeah. And actually, like most people, like they go to a cardiac arrest, and you know, if it's run well, even if you don't get ROSC, like you know, you manage the family well and stuff, and overall, it's a positive kind of job.
Yeah,
most people like really rejuvenate by that, and you know, like people generally go home happier.
Yeah,
with those kind of jobs, and that's kind of what I've taken from what you just said. Like the DOA, the dead body, is not the thing that is upsetting.
No,
it is like the stuff around it.
Yeah, it was the. Losing my iPad under the patient, or
whatever. Yeah,
and just embarrassing yourself that way, and then suddenly I realised I've been doing too much overtime.
Yeah,
yeah, it was 100%.
And then I think
it's always you must have seen some people say, "Oh, you must have seen some horrible things."
Yeah,
but the things I've
actually
seen,
it's not about seeing stuff; it's about being paid poor money for dealing with this stuff.
Yeah. And it's you must have seen some horrible things. Yeah, my paycheck. That's what classic is.
Exactly.
Isn't it? But, you know, whenever I, it's just rest, isn't it? Rest, balance, you get hardly any of it. And, like, you see a lot of our staff smoke, a lot of them
have
caffeine addictions, a lot of them turn up to work with a six-pack of Monster Energy drinks and they get McDonald's because, like, that's shift work.
Yeah.
And it's you're getting ground down through the middle and, it's not what you see necessarily, but it's how you are when you're at work. It just can be brutal.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's like we were talking about before, but if you're expected to be, I think that's the other thing about why it is not only appropriate to treat work, as like a job, but also it's healthier thing to do as well, because if you're expected, you know, like people expect you to go above and beyond because you're a selfless healthcare professional.
Yeah.
If you like buy into that, which is really easy to do, if you buy into it and then you become like emotionally invested in, oh, they need overtime, so I'll do it. Or they need crew, you know, like we've gone into a major instance, so they need crews to stay on for another 2 hours. I'll do it for the greater good and stuff. If you become emotionally invested in that, then like you're literally taking all that burden on.
Yeah.
And it's like, the senior managers they're not the ones taking that burden on.
No.
And I feel like that's why it's a healthier option to treat work as work.
Yeah.
And you feel like, you know, I'm not, you know, if the ambulance service is in a business continuity incident, a major incident, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
that's someone's fault, maybe a system fault.
Yeah.
But the fault is definitely not mine as an individual. And it's not my responsibility to bail them out of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the kind of a bit of, like staying a little bit removed is like the healthier thing to do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like things like turning your emails off when you're not at work.
Yeah, right.
Like, that is such that made I had mine on because I was a brand new keen NQP one year in. But keep those emails away. It's just such an easy, good decision to make.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about the road closure in 3 weeks' time
no.
when I'm currently sitting in the pub.
And you know as well, top tip on the side of that, have you heard of that inbox rules?
No.
Oh my God, mate. So on Outlook, you can set inbox rules. So you can say, like, if an email comes from a particular person or has like a particular word in the subject, you can assign it to stuff. So like my inbox is pretty much always empty because like any compliments are automatically going to compliment folder. Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
There's a complaints folder. Don't look at them either. And there's all these different folders for stuff. If I get an email that says road closure in the title, it's automatically deleted. Emails from certain team leaders, automatically deleted. So honestly, it's an absolute game changer. It's like clearing out your brain.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, I just need to get on that.
Yeah, so you need to get on that.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, it's been a couple of hours now. Good chat. So let's bring it to a close, shall we?
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if... in my notes, there's anything else that I was going to talk about. Nothing else, I don't think, was there. Any burning things you want to bring up whilst you're being broadcast to millions?
No, that'll do for now, I think.
No, yeah. No,
I'll ease myself in.
Nice one. Well, thanks for joining me, mate. It's been a good chat.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.